You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 994. Yes, folks, we're getting close to the 1,000. 1,000 episodes, my God. We've got a friend of the show, a former co-host. He's still mentally recovering from the experience. Guys, still a friend. We've got Steve Saunders in the house. He is the joint owner and joint principal of a leading WordPress agency, Hasselfish. And we're going to be talking about his experiences with podcasting, how he sees AI affecting WordPress-focused agencies and agency life in general. So, Steve, would you like to give the new listeners and viewers a quick 10, 15-second intro, and then when we come to the main part of the show, we can delve into your history in a bit more detail?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm the co-founder of Hasselfish. We're a full-service marketing agency, but we specialize a lot on WordPress stuff. So working on WordPress websites, helping people market those and promote whatever products they're trying to sell.
And I've got my great co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Yeah, folks, Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Mañana No Mas. We focus largely on learning and membership style websites. And we also do a lot of work directly with WP Tonic.
That's fantastic. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I have got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, running a business is tough. You shouldn't have to worry about your website, too. With Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress, you get lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 expert support from real humans. Switch to Kinsta and see site speeds improve by up to 200% with effortless migrations and powerful, easy-to-use dashboard. Join over 120,000 other businesses who also trust Kinsta. Get your first month for free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
We're coming back, folks. I also want to take the opportunity to tell you that we've got some great special offers from the sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress technology and services aimed at the power user, freelancer, and small agency owner. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals, and you'll find all the goodies there. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page. I'm sorry, I just love saying that. And seemingly, the tribe loves me saying that as well. So, Steve, maybe we can delve in a little bit detail. So, how did you get into the world of web design development and then specifically into WordPress?
Yeah, so I started doing marketing, and out of college, marketing has a lot to do with web. So whenever I was working with a company doing marketing stuff, there was always these big web questions, and really started leaning into the WordPress space just as a place to build out websites, customize stuff, because you can really do whatever you wanted with WordPress. And a lot of systems were a lot more locked down, and there weren't quite as many options as there is today. So it was pretty easy to find WordPress and gravitate towards WordPress. And as I started just kind of doing marketing stuff, got more and more into web. So whether that's, web design, building the sites, thinking about conversion rate optimization, all that stuff, just got deeper and deeper into WordPress and learned more and more about how to build themes and plugins. And now we're in the great age of all sorts of page builders and the ability to create pretty much anything you want.
So what was you studying at college, actually?
Marketing. So I majored in marketing. They always told me that marketing is like the liberal arts degree of the business world. And I had more fun hanging out with people in college than doing classes. So I kind of ended up in marketing just because it was an easier path that seemed more fun. It's pretty complex, and you can get pretty detail oriented in the marketing world too, though.
Yeah, well, I was going to say you know we've known one another a few years now. You're quite technical as well, aren't you? How did that develop? Is it just that you also, because most people, that you're one of those few hybrids that I know that's really effective, but what I mean by that, Stephen, is that you've got a good business mind and marketing, but you also like the tech as well, don't you?
Yeah, I think there's something just inside me that always gravitated toward like problem solving. And because a lot of the marketing work had web components when I got out of college and started working full time, like I pretty quickly just volunteered to start building stuff and building out the website versus having, you know, a developer do it. And I just enjoyed like solving those problems and trying to figure it out and piece it together. And I think that a lot of times marketing can feel really intangible. Like you're running a lot of campaigns and ideas and just like what's actually working, what's not, especially, you know, 15 years ago, there's a lot less data. Right now we can get way more data on way more things. So I think it felt even more intangible back then. But when you were building a site and you could see somebody clicking a button and you knew if you changed this or you changed that, that you could see some change in metrics, I think that's what really hooked me. And so to get better at that, I had to learn more and more about web development and how to build websites and how to program, teaching myself JavaScript and PHP and all that goodness. So I think that's kind of how that path kind of led down to that area. And as I got better and better with my coding skills, like my marketing skills got better and better too, because I think those kind of go hand in hand a little bit.
Yeah, you do.
They're very related.
Over to you, Kurt.
I think it's so funny to have conversations with people and realize, wow, this person thinks completely different than I do. Like, so I am part of a couple of different marketing little circles. Mm-hmm. And I always find the people that are like really into marketing, and they're brilliant in their own right because they do things I can't possibly, like I'm not graphically creative, right? And mm-hmm. So I'm more of an implementer. I can problem solve and make things happen kind of guy. And so I have to add people to my team, you know, that can do, you know, the super creative visual stuff. And I refer to that as like crystals and pyramids, right? I think these people are like crystals and pyramids. They're out there in the ether, but when they have a certain brilliance, you can chime in on. And then you're a really rare like unicorn, because if you are really focused and driven by marketing, but you've also embraced the code and the technical side of it, that's like a superpower.
Yeah. And I think, you know, where I've really found that superpower is like, I'm not the best coder in the world. I'm not the best marketer in the world. But being able to like sit in between those spaces means you can be the best in something. And like, I'm not like my older brother works on satellites and is like this amazing mechanical engineer. And his mind is just like the ability to like solve these really technical problems is incredible. And I've never been able to solve like mathematical equations the way that he's been able to solve. And I've had friends who are really amazing designers. I've never been able to design at their level, but being able to sit somewhere in between those two worlds where you can pull in, like you were saying, Kurt, like a designer, or you can pull in a developer with some really deep technical knowledge to help you get you unstuck. You have to know enough to kind of like span that gap or to speak those languages. And I think as I found out that like that's the area that I am really good at, I've kind of leaned more and more into that space and into that area. And I think like half the battle of life, especially building a business, is like figuring out what your niche is. And I think a lot of people look at niches as like, what sort of sector do I like? Am I going to be in like the lawyer doctor sector. I'm going to be in the home improvement sector, right? And I'm going to build a business that caters to this group of people or that group of people. I think there's also this idea of like niching into what you are good at and just like, what are you actually great at adding value at better than, you know, most other people? And as you can lean more and more and more into that, then the value that you can provide as a business just keeps increasing and increasing. I think as I started a marketing agency, I started really like big and vague, like we'll do anything. Like, yo, you have a job? You want to pay me money? Yeah, over here. Like I'll figure out a way to do it. But as we've grown as a company, like realizing that like what we're really good at is highly technical stuff that takes an element of marketing and design is like kind of our niche. And what we're really good at. So like right now we're working with a fairly large company working on a jobs board integration with an HR platform. And so like the marketing aspect would be like, how do they market their jobs better and get more eyeballs on their jobs besides just, you know, the standard posting it all over on all the jobs platforms. But like to do it, we had to integrate a bunch of APIs and create a bunch of like daily automated tasks that run behind the scene that like update things and delete things. And like when we can find a space like that, that's where we can add a lot of value.
Ah, it's cool. It's if we were to take part of your answer there about talking about niches and kind of segue into our second question, that was and this is neat because I didn't know that you had a podcast. So it came up in the show notes and I said, oh, well, let's go listen to Steven's podcast. So I did. I really liked the episode with the Feral Outdoors.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was cool, but I'm kind of an outdoors person. So I was like, oh, this is cool. What's this guy talking about? Your podcast is called Through the Dip, right? So anyone that wants to go find that, it's throughthedip.com. Share with us like what kind of lessons you've learned exploring this niche.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started the podcast because we went through our own dip, like trying to figure out business as a lot of businesses do. And it felt like when we were going through that phase of our business and kind of having all these like existential questions, it felt really lonely. And I felt like I wasn't sure who to turn to or ask questions to. And then when I did find people to ask questions to, it's like the questions were more foundational to like who the business is and who I am as a person than it is actually, oh, well, here's what you need to do from an accounting method standpoint. And what I realized is that when companies are facing these really big dips, a lot of times the thing that they have to figure out is not business, but who are they and what is their relationship to this? Like, what are they trying to do? What are they trying to put into the world? What are they trying to say? And the more the CEO or the leader of that business can figure out what they are doing and can articulate it clearly, it has an infinitely bigger impact than just saying, oh, how do we, you know, optimize this product line or how do we cut spending? I mean, those things all have their places, but wrestling with those existential questions and understanding the answer to them, I think is insanely important. And so all of a sudden I wanted to be able to go around and start asking people like, how did you navigate this? Like, what questions were you asking about yourself? What were you trying to find out? What were you wrestling with? How did it affect your family and your relationships and friends? And it's really hard to just be like, hey, let's grab a beer and talk about these really deep personal questions. Like that's stuff that it takes like years of friendship to be like, to get to the point where you can sit down from across from somebody and be like, yeah, how'd that like impact your relationship with your wife? Like when X, Y, or Z happened, right? Like you have to like earn that. But what I realized is that with podcasting, people automatically all give you like the license to ask those deep questions. Like that's the point of it. And you kind of have this mutually agreed thing. And so all of a sudden I found that I could jump into these conversations and start having some really deep, meaningful conversations that would take years of friendship to get to. But because it's in this platform or this kind of mutually agreed to, I'm asking you deep questions about life, that I could start asking these things that were kind of in the back of my head. How did other people navigate their companies through the dip? And so that's kind of where that podcast came from. and why I started there was almost as a therapeutic way of dealing with what I experienced or felt by going through the dip myself.
Well, and I think if I could just be like transparent and share something, I met you at WordCamp in San Diego.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so I'm just going to let the audience know right now, like, I think you doing a podcast and, you know, kind of articulating your goal of the podcast or how you communicate with people, I think that you're very natural at that. I mean, I still remember vividly the deep conversation that you and I had had on a specific subject. And I really felt like when I walked away from that table that I'd made a new friend.
Steve had never had deep conversations with me.
So
you felt about those conversations, Jonathan.
I think that's an inherent quality that you have as a person, and you're able to amplify that through the methodology, through the tool of the podcast. I mean, if I could be so bold, right? Because that's the only time we've shared a physical space is with San Diego.
Yeah, totally. And I think it kind of goes two ways. Like, I mean, you made that space open for me to like start asking deep questions. I mean, I think if I remember right, that was quite a few years ago, but like I was kind of at this place of like trying to figure out religion and church and my relationship to all that. That's from a very like personal standpoint, not as much business standpoint.
Yeah.
But just like who you are as a person too, like I think opened up the space for me to be like, hey, Kurt, like, what do you think about this? And I think there's something that's very interesting about meeting a new person and being open and transparent with that person and allowing them to speak into your life because they don't have the context for who you were. Sometimes that's incredibly helpful, but getting fresh perspective from somebody where you can just lay it out and all of a sudden somebody who's not like rooted in your own context, I think can be super helpful. And I thought back to that conversation several times and really appreciated that chat that we had.
I think a lot of it comes to your point, to like that vested interest perspective, right? Like we're supposed to love our spouses and share everything with our spouses. But if I'm going to make a big decision in my household, or let's say I'm even thinking about a big decision in my household, if I bring up like, hey, I think I'm going to buy a Corvette this summer, right? My wife is going to go, no, absolutely not. You know, that's foolish, blah, 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 right? Because that's that bias, right? She has a vested interest in like not taking financial risks in the house chair. Whereas if I shared that with a stranger, they might be like, hey, what's your favorite generation Corvette? You know, do you go for the LT1, the LT3, automatic, manual? You need to have conversations with a broader circle to get better input sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's interesting watching how, like with doing this podcast, is watching how people have made kind of like those decisions, like those big decisions in life. Like one of the, I think it was the first podcast that I published was with this guy who was starting a dairy. And there was this moment in time where he chose to not pay for his health insurance and pay to feed the cows on the dairy. And it ended up like his wife found out she was pregnant that month and then insurance wouldn't cover it because it had lapsed when they had figured it out. And it kind of created this huge kind of juggernaut of a problem. And I think it's easy to look at that and be like, well, why? That's a terrible choice, right? Like from a relationship standpoint and from a safety standpoint and a health standpoint. But like if you sit down with someone and talk to them for an hour and a half about this, all of a sudden you understand like the situation that they were in. Like if you didn't feed the cows weren't going to produce milk, which means you weren't going to be able to pay your bills, which means you were just going to get farther in the hole. And it became this logical kind of decision that maybe you would make a different decision, but it's not a completely irrational, insane decision, right? And all of a sudden you have empathy for that person in that space. And when I think that's the beautiful thing about like being able to do podcasts or sitting down and just talking with someone for a long period of time is that you can start understanding and unraveling that story, which allows you to have a lot more empathy for that person. I think when you just see headlines or quick blurbs, I think like about this in the news all the time, right? So-and-so did X, Y, or Z or whatever happened. It's just like, there's a lot of underlying context to that you necessarily don't have. And that context is important to like truly empathize with a person, understand why and how they made those decisions.
I agree. Jonathan?
Yeah, I just got to follow a few questions. So I was getting the impression that the decision to make to do the podcast, and I think you do it in seasons, don't you? Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Was it a decision to kind of work out, it wasn't totally for commercial reasons, or was there also a commercial element? Or because when I started the WP Tonic show, there was no commercial element to it. I was asked by a former host who was in podcasting, why don't we do a podcast together about WordPress? And that was almost over 10 years ago. Wow. And Crazy Bill, as I call him, I did speak to him a couple of weeks ago, and he's still as crazy as ever, but he's doing okay. But there was no, I just thought it was interesting. He knew something about editing, and why not? The second podcast I do, which I also do with Kurt, it was done purely on commercial reasons because it's targeting the industry and sector that I'm trying to build a business in. Mm-hmm. So I get the impression that this was more about a slight crisis that you were facing with your business, and that was one of the why you gave the title of the podcast, and that's why you wanted to talk in that area. Am I on the right track, or was there an element of commercial influence in as well?
I think looking at it now, you're right on the money. But I think that if you would have talked to me when I first started the podcast, I think I would have told you was for a lot more commercial sort of reasons. I don't think I realized necessarily exactly the full reason why I was starting it or naming it what I was going to name it. Really, like, I was like, we need to figure out how to sell marketing services. Let's start connecting with business owners. And this is a topic that I'm kind of interested in and I would like to talk more about. And so I think there was a commercial sort of element behind it. I think as I started talking to more people and thinking about it more and kind of thinking back through my own journey, which, I mean, you have to do to meaningfully engage with other people that have been through similar situations as yourself, right? And all of a sudden, they're teaching me more about myself as we're talking about their stories. I think my purpose for starting the podcast didn't have very good commercial grounds, and I just made it up to justify the action of doing it. And I wouldn't have admitted it to myself at the very beginning. I would have been like, oh yeah, this is a very smart marketing commercial thing. But like what I've gotten back from it is so much more than the commercial side ever gave me back from the podcast. Like,
well,
I mean,
because, you know, when we've discussed things, when we had the last discussion, you were actually questioning, you know, was that a good broad subject? And it's got some negatives. But I think you've also in this discussion, you kind of covered the more benefit side, because it's a deeper concept and discussion you're going to have with somebody. But I also think that anybody that's done anything in business or in life has had some very, very dark periods.
Yeah.
I know I have. And really, you know, they challenge the total concept of what you are, what you think you were. Yeah. And anybody that's had any success says that they haven't had those periods. Either they're lying to themselves or they're trying to bullshit you. That's my opinion. Would you agree with that, Stephen?
Yeah, I think that, whether something is created for like more a commercial reason or you're creating it for more a personal reason, I think that anytime you open yourself up to the process of creating, you learn something about yourself. and you're able to go deeper into yourself. Like whatever you're doing. And by leaning into that creative thing, whether it's in business or work, like you end up diving deeper than you initially thought. And I think it's the diving deeper that like separates the bullshit and the BS from everything else. And I think like from just different podcasts, guests that I've had on, like the people who are willing to open up and go deeper or have opened up and gone deeper and understand themselves more, like those are the stories that really hit versus the ones that stay, you know, a little bit more surface level. And that's where like the BS happens, because it's not the actual meat or the root or the thing that is underlying that. And so I think in the process of creating something, you always get to dive a little bit deeper. And there's always, I think it's always worthwhile to the exercise of creating, whether that's a podcast or art or building a new website. If you're willing to open yourself up to that creative process, like it's not just the thing that you create. It's the thing that you learn about yourself that I think.
And I've discussed it with Kirk. There's this culture that's quite prevalent online about that business is easy, building something is easy. You know, you follow, I've got this secret, and if you give me a load of money, you can be successful like in 2 weeks or 3 months or whatever. And it's nonsense, isn't it? It's just absolute nonsense.
Yeah, you know? I think the tricky thing is that like business is easy when you look at it from just a very informational standpoint. Like create something that people will see as valuable and sell it for more than it took to create it. Done. Right. Successful business. But then like, how does that actually work? How does that get implemented in real life? That's the hard part. Like looking at a balance sheet or a profit and loss statement and like, oh, we got to make more money than we spend. Like that's an easy concept. Everyone understands that. It's not that hard to teach. It's the actual how do they move through it and how do you do it. That's right. It's kind of like love. Like loving someone is easy until it's not, but that's when love actually really starts. And so I think like all these gurus, they're not necessarily wrong. Yeah, business is easy if I give you a PowerPoint presentation and show you, you know, how market demand and pricing works and stuff. Like there's basic concepts. But how do you actually make that work inside of a product with actual real people who, you know, end up changing the scope of a project because their business goals have changed? How do you walk? Like that gets complex because people are involved. And anytime people are involved, the complexity increases infinitely.
That's fantastic. I think we're going to go for our middle break. It's been fantastic catching up with one of my former co-hosts. It's been a great discussion. We're going to go for our middle break, and we've got some great topics to discuss in the second half. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
Updating plugins and themes shouldn't feel risky. That's why over 300,000 WordPress users trust WP Rollback. With just a click, you can safely roll back any plugin or theme. No manual file uploads and no downtime. And with WP Rollback Pro, you can download premium plugins and themes. Tools like Elementor, Gravity Forms, more. Track every rollback you do with detailed activity logs. Protect your workflow and take the stress out of updates. Learn more at wprollback.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. I just want to take the opportunity, if you're looking for a great hosting partner, why don't you look at WP Tonic? We specialize in the hosting of membership and community-focused websites, plus WooCommerce. We are more than a hosting provider. All our sites are hosted on Vulture, but we are a lot more. We're your technical and marketing partner as well, if you need that. To find out more, why don't you go over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners. We also offer some great financial affiliate packages. If you become a partner, it's a great package. Let's build something special together. Let's go straight into it. Did you like that, Stephen, that last bit?
Yeah, it was very nice. Very smooth.
It only took me 4-5 years to work that one out. I'm a very slow learner, but I do get there. So there we go. So what do you think are some of the biggest challenges regional agencies are? I'm not talking about the freelancer. I think they've got separate issues, but the 10 to 20 person agency are facing at the present moment. What are some of the things your agency are facing? And when you talk to other agency owners, principals, they discuss with you?
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things right now, I mean, it's always been hard, but like, how do you grow? How do you get bigger in a industry that takes a lot of trust and developing that trust with people? And I think that the world is incredibly noisy right now and is getting only more noisy, like just with social media feeds, posts, like you're just getting bombarded from every side. And I think breaking through that noise is getting harder and harder. Like if you, I don't know if you've ever read Seth Godin's Purple Cow.
Yeah.
Like this is one of those things, like the concept is easy and very understandable, right? Like if you see a purple cow in the field, you're going to tell all your friends about it, right? And that's like free marketing or advertising. Like if you can design a product that's a purple cow where people will talk about it and share it with their friends, like all of a sudden you can grow and spread your message and you know what you're trying to do in the world. But I think it is getting harder and harder and harder to have a purple cow because there's so many people with insane and crazy stuff that are just being posted all of the time everywhere. And to try to make something that actually stands out against the crowd, I think is getting harder and harder these days. And I think you can see that in ads budgets, like in what you're spending on ads and how far an ad will reach and how far an ad will go. You can see that, you know, in websites and what it takes to build a great website is a lot harder than what it used to. Customer service, all of that stuff.
Oh, it's funny you say that. I thought with Lovable, you can look up a website that converts straight away.
It's true. Yeah. At least that's what they tell me. apparently I'm just dumb or I don't understand how to use it right. But, It's a lot harder than they say. You're just not putting
the right prompts in, Stephen. Yeah,
it's always the prompt's fault. If only you had the right prompt, the things you could build.
So what you're, just to summarize, your discussions and between you and your colleagues, it's just growing the agency and getting it, cutting through all the noise. You just feel that is increasing. Being able to grow the business the way that you would like to.
Yeah, it feels like it is getting harder and harder. Like the posting on LinkedIn doesn't have the reach that it used to have. Posting on social media doesn't have the reach that it used to have. And I think just with as noise gets louder and more, it is harder for people who don't want to be the noisiest person in the room to break through. And like, I don't love the game of like who can be the loudest. Cause oftentimes the loudest people are not the people that you want to be listening to. Let's look at one little thing, like a cold email. Like cold email used to be challenging to send and it was actually somewhat meaningful. But as AI has grown, the amount of cold emails that people are able to send has grown exponentially, and there's just so much more garbage and chatter in that space that it's just like, it's not, if I'm spending a day going through LinkedIn, looking at people in my local area that I want to connect with. And I'm going to reach out and send them a cold email, say, hey, like, let's grab a coffee or something. I used to always get responses back to those. But because of all this other crap cold email, it is really hard to actually genuinely connect with somebody. Because just breaking through is people's attention. Just they don't have as much attention. And so you can't break through as easily anymore.
All right. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I think we kind of scraped the surface with that last round of answers, but we were really meaning to ask about, you know, AI and how do you see the technology affecting WordPress development over the next 18 months? I mean, you kind of mentioned AI in a phrase. And like, I'm in this weird space internally myself right now. I'm like, I use AI, I leverage automation tools, but I'm also really struggling with how do I maintain a more organic approach for my clients? Because my clients seem to suffer AI fatigue before I even meet them. And so we're in this really, you know, unique, you know, dichotomy kind of situation. I was wondering what your thoughts were in the space.
Yeah. I think from like an agency standpoint, what I've seen a lot of agencies make mistakes and are continuing to make some, I think, pretty costly mistakes right now with AI is that they're trying to move faster than AI is moving. And so you can design like automated systems and ways of like trying to do something smarter than what ChatGPT is doing or what Grok is doing or Perplexity or, you know, whatever the AI platform is that you're subscribed to, right? You can like create all these prompts, prompt engineer, try to figure out how to do something better. But you're putting a bunch of time into something that's like changing incredibly rapidly. And it is better to just be like, you know what? This isn't working right now, but in 6 months, someone will probably already have this problem solved because AI is just going to get better. Like our models just need to get better a lot of times. And if you can wait until AI gets to the point where you want it to get to, then I think you have a lot more likelihood of getting to success instead of wasting a ton of time designing and over-engineering systems to try to push AI at the very forefront. I think like as an agency, if you take a couple steps back and you lag behind by several months, you will have far more fun and a lot more success than trying to push into the latest because it is moving so fast. If it was something that was moving slow, right? Something that took a couple years to iterate on, like sure, like go spend some time, become the best at something, push something to like the very edge and you can get clients because of that. But when you put a bunch of time into pushing something to the very edge and then it changes and it's infinitely better than what you were able to get to because a new model was released, all of a sudden, just all that work and time could have been put to something else that actually would have moved the needle. And so I think that's one of the biggest traps. So like AI site creation, I don't think is near where it needs to be right now. You can't just put in a prompt and get a website that's great. You can put in a prompt and get a website that's okay. Mm-hmm. And then instead of spending hours banging your head around how do you create the best prompt to create the best site and handle all of these edge cases, like just get the pretty okay version and then start working through it yourself to make it great. Like people still need to exist to bridge the gap between where AI is and where we want it to be right now. And I think it's going to be in that space for a little while. And so like, don't be worried to try to like hop in and bridge that gap with manual work and manual effort. Wait for AI to get there. Don't be the person to try to invent the system to get us there, unless that's your SaaS product and that's your what your whole company is built around. But
yeah,
I think as an agency, I've seen a lot of agencies just burn so much time on trying to create something that they shouldn't be creating.
It's funny you mentioned that absolute scenario right there. That's actually one of the products we do. I know Jonathan at WP Tonic, very similarly, startups and low budget projects, you know, they can't afford a bespoke custom website with, you know, I want it to look like this Figma file, right? Like those are great jobs. Those are awesome. My agency loves to see something like that come in. But a lot of times we have clients that don't have budget. Mm-hmm. And so we end up using ZipWP or Cadence WP. We use the AI site builder, right? And that really helps the client break through that writer's block, right? Like,
yeah,
you can imagine what my site would look like. Well, great. Let's do this. Let's put in a paragraph. Let's get some base first draft content, pick some pictures, pick a format, pick some colors, pick a font. And this is now you've got a great first draft starter site that you can go through, like you said, and you can pick it out. You can say, oh, okay, I'm going to change this picture, change this heading, change this call to action. But at the end of the day, you got them a great head start.
Yeah. I think that's like where I've seen the most efficiency increase in AI is like you take somebody like you guys, right, who are good at building sites, you know how to build sites, and then you layer in AI to assist you. Like you can move so much faster and get to places way faster. But you take a client who doesn't know anything about site building or just like really struggles with it, then you layer in AI and it creates a worse mess than like if they would just try it themselves. Like if you already understand how to do something, AI can make you way more efficient at doing that thing. If you have no idea on how to do the thing, AI just becomes this like really frustrating kind of roadblock where you almost get there, but you can't get past this certain point. I think the same thing with like just like actually writing code and developers. Like the better the developer, the more efficient I have seen AI is at helping them do what they're doing. The worse developer, the less AI is actually really helpful because it ends up creating these scenarios and situations that just like become some horrific monolithic code kind of thing that's just really hard to unwind or find out what's happening or what's going on there.
Yeah. And then Jonathan and I actually had the overall worst experience with AI. And that's when a client says, hey, I asked you guys to build me this plugin and you told me it would cost so much money, but have you ever heard of ChatGPT and how easy it is to make a plugin? All I need you to do is put this file in my website.
It's true. It's easy until it's not. And then it's really, really, really not. I mean, like it can speed you up, right? It can make you faster, but it's not going to get you to where you need to go if there's any sort of complexity in it. And especially if it has to work inside of your business systems and constraints, because trying to communicate the nuances of a business system to AI and spell it out in a way that you have completely articulated all of the variables. Like, I think people don't understand how humans, we can hold all of these variables simultaneously in our head and be able to build something that works. Try to take all those variables and take them out of our brain, document them so that AI can understand all the variables and then create the thing is almost impossible. And we can see that in humans. Like, if I've built an application and now I'm going to pass it over to you, Kurt, to support, and I tried it and I'm like, all right, I'm going to give you a download on how this thing works and how and everything that it functions. Inevitably, I will miss something and not completely explain some nuance or some small aspect of it that I understood or knew, but I just forgot to put that in. I forgot to explain that because I just know it, right? And our brains just can like work that stuff out. And so all of a sudden you're in the dark. It's the same thing with like AI, right? Except AI doesn't necessarily have the tools to have all that contextual knowledge from years of working together right now that, you know, like me and Kurt could have had. And so you can end up in this place where it's just like really hard to solve the problems because you as a person aren't very good at getting out all of the details. I mean, think about a client trying to explain what they want their site to look like. Like, unless you have built tons of sites, it is very hard to find the exact words to communicate exactly what you want. And I think that's where like experts still are incredibly important because you need somebody that has the words or the ability to verbalize it. I think another great example is like, you know, they talk about colors and languages that have words for more specific colors. Those people can see actually different colors than people that don't have the words to describe it. And if you would take the time to learn those words and be able to distinguish between these two different colors, you would start seeing a lot more colors in the world and distinguishing different colors. And someone has to be able to see it and verbalize it for AI to be able to do anything with it. And that's why like people like Kurt and John, like you guys hop in helping out with AI. Like ChatGPT can't just do it. They can get you there. They can help assist you, but they're not going to be able to write the whole thing because we don't necessarily have the words to communicate it the way that it needs to be communicated with all the context and variables involved.
Well, I'm partially colorblind, but I know what periwinkle is.
It's a good one.
Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, good. See what the time is, maybe replace five for this question. But just maybe do both quickly. Where do you think WordPress is in the 10-20 person agency space at the present moment? You know, you remarked earlier on in our conversation that there's a lot more options out there than when you started with WordPress, but in some ways I've been quite impressed how robust the usage of WordPress still is in the small to medium sized agency space. So in your own agency, when you talk to other agency owners, what do you think are the general feelings around using WordPress?
Yeah, I think that a lot of companies, when they come to agencies and asking them for help with something, they are expecting a system that can be flexible enough to be adapted to their specific business case. And they don't want to have to change their business case to work with said system. And I think that's why WordPress is still like one of the number one things that agency uses, because of that expectation. If I'm in Shopify or I'm in Webflow, there are quite a few scenarios that can come up where the system just can't do it the way the client wants it. And the client would have to change how their business runs from some operational standpoint. Sometimes that's a big thing, sometimes it's a small thing, but the client generally has the expectation that you will customize the solution to fit their exact business case. And I think you see the same thing with courses and us like learning, online learning things, where there are like oftentimes very specific things that people want. Like, when do people get certificates? How do people move through a course? When are some courses unlocked? When are other courses not unlocked? And there's a lot of great off the shelf solutions out there if you are okay with changing how you are running your business or structuring your courses to match their system. Within WordPress, there's a lot more customization that you can do. And so you can make it run the way that you want it to run. And so I think that's why it's still such a popular thing in agencies, is because of that expectation from the clients of like, you will make this run the way that I want to run. And a lot of systems out there are too constrained to actually do that.
Yeah, I think you've put that very coherently, actually. So let's move on to the what should have been the. Now, I'm going to say to you, marketing, business, or WordPress, because you span all those worlds, really. So are there one or two individuals in the marketing, business, or WordPress buckets that really impress you? And when they're producing some content, you will watch it or consume it just because they've come back on your radar?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
And you don't have to mention me, Stephen.
Fine, then I'll mention Kurt.
That's wiser.
No, you know what? Over the last 6 months, I've really taken a step back from listening to the influencers or talking heads in different industries and spaces, just because I've gotten so tired of hearing, you know, their opinionated ideas on something. I used to really pay attention a lot more, but I think that I have found a lot more value in trying to figure out things myself and trying to come up with the opinion or thought myself, and not put more weight on the so-called guru or expert, and actually trying to find something that solves the problem. So like, I go to Reddit now far more than I did a year ago. And I'm way more involved in Reddit than I ever have been before, because it's like the last place that it feels like I'm actually talking to humans still. Although I will say that it feels like there's more and more bots getting involved, but at least there's like historic stuff from 3 years ago that we know are humans. And so like, I don't know if there's any like two or three people that I pay specific attention to. No, but I have found myself reading through change logs and update stuff, like kind of more boring things to see what's coming out and what's new.
Sounds like your life's getting sad, Stephen.
It's true. I mean, it's winter here in Michigan, of course.
Oh, dear.
Oh, there's like 2 feet of snow outside and we're going
to go. Oh, we got that to look forward to tomorrow, the next day. I think just a remark. There's a few people I listen to regularly, and I'm a great consumer of podcasts myself because I do a lot of walking to try and keep myself fit. And I just love podcasting. But there are small groups of people, but especially in the AI space, people. I've noticed there's a few people that are highly intelligent that were in venture capital, in business, that are never really been in the technical side of AI, and they tend to be very upbeat. There's also heads of AI laboratories like Gemini, Perplexity, Claude. They are pushing their book in some ways, but I think but then there's people that got a lot of experience with AI, and they're quite negative on how far we can get large learning models. So I've never known a period where there's people I followed who are totally giving contradictory messages. Mm-hmm. I mean, so wide from one another that there is no plausibility. And they don't seem to be lying, and they don't seem to have an obvious book of business that they're pushing, but their positions are so contradictory on the same data that it's mind-blowing, basically. So that's something I've observed. So over to you, Kurt.
Well, now I'm confused. Am I supposed to talk about who my people are?
Well, yeah, maybe you maybe give us some about a couple of people that you follow, and because I know you've got to be off in a minute. He's very busy, Stephen. He's very booked up.
Well, it's just it's interesting. I mean, WP Tuts to me is incredibly insightful, and some of the information he shares. So I like that. I used to listen to Jamie Poodle Press quite a bit, but ever since he did the thing ever since he kind of switched his direction, I haven't. And then I'm an Etch consumer, so I listen to a lot of the Etch stuff because I got to figure out what the heck I'm doing with that tool anyway. My learning curve on Etch was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be, so I made a crazy assumption and paid for it and then realized I had to learn a lot. So, yeah, that really kind of puts it into a nutshell for me, Jonathan, because you and I do so much content together that we kind of have to study up show notes and product reviews and stuff for that. So kind of soaks up the time.
Well, you do. But no, I do the ideas and get everything set up. So I think we have a divergence of labor.
I think a part of it is kind of what you were saying, Jonathan, that like, or even what you were saying, Kurt, is just like people's thoughts and opinions have changed really fast, and they keep changing really fast. Like from people that were following, they were saying one thing, and now there's like very pro AI and then negative AI, right? And all of a sudden, like they've switched, or they have aligned with this person, and then all of a sudden they've killed ties with that person. Now they're aligning with this thought and this person over here. And I think that I've just gotten really tired of it. And so that's probably why I don't follow a lot of people. It's just that there's just so much noise and so much movement. And I would rather just take a little bit of a breath and slow things down a little bit, which maybe means I'm a little bit behind on things. But I think with where things are right now, moving a little bit slower is almost advantageous, even from like a political standpoint. Like the political environment and what's happening is changing so quickly that it's almost impossible to make really solid and good bets based on current information because it can change so fast. Like one of our clients was used tons of their cash to purchase a ton of parts from China before the tariffs would go into place. And at various times this year, he's like, I've made the best decision. Like, this was so good for our business. And then at other times this year, he was like, I made the worst decision. I should have kept that cash flow free. Like, and that's what we're finding ourselves, because we're in the seesawing of just like AI changing every day, it feels like. And from a political standpoint, what rules and laws and trade agreements and stuff changing all the time so rapidly that trying to keep up feels exhausting. And I think almost playing things a little bit more conservatively allows us to just create a little breathing room and maybe make some more thoughtful decisions.
Yeah, we're going to... Are you okay to do some bonus content for 10, 15 minutes, or do you have to be off?
Yeah, sure.
All right, that'd be great. I know we've got to round it up because Kirk's got to be off. So, Kirk, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to, Kirk?
Well, for a personal connection, it would just be LinkedIn, because I'm the only Kurt Von Onen there. I'm easy to find. And then for business, it's Mañana No Mas on all the channels.
That's fantastic. And Stephen, my beloved former co-host, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what your agency's up to, Stephen?
Hustlefish.com if you want to check out the agency. And then LinkedIn if you want to check out me. Although there are a lot of Stephen Souders out there. So I try to match this ugly mug to the one you see on LinkedIn.
I always loved the agency name, Hustlefish. I thought that was a fantastic name. All right, we're going to round it up now, folks. We will be back next week. It's our roundtable show. Also, we've got the big boss coming on the show in February. We've got Matt Marenweg coming back on the show for the interview about AI. Should be a great discussion. It's really interesting to see where WordPress in the age of AI is going. Hopefully, I'm sure Matt will have some great things to say about that. We will be back next week, folks. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.